the music we hear each and every Thursday here on Main Street, the Fanfare, means it's time for one thing and one thing only, our weekly trip to the movies with Matt Olien. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Hi, Craig.
Matt, this week's movie is The Apprentice. Let's listen to the trailer.
Yes.
Hello, this is Donald Trump from Mr. Cohn. Thank you so much.
Donald who?
One, two, three, four!
Roy Cohn, nice to meet you.
The Roy Cohn, you're brutal.
Guilty as charged.
I didn't always win.
There's rules. The first rule is attack, attack, attack.
It's gonna be the finest building in the city. Maybe the country. In the world.
Rule two, admit nothing. Deny everything.
There's never been anything like this, of this magnitude, this quality.
Ooh, cheese balls over here.
What are you doing?
You want one?
No, it looks totally disgusting.
Cheese balls.
Rule three, no matter what happens, you claim victory and never admit defeat.
You have to be willing to do anything to anyone to win.
You have a big ass. You gotta work on that.
Your face looked like an orange.
Attack, attack, attack.
Deny everything.
Admit nothing.
Never admit defeat.
What if you lost your fortune today?
Well, then maybe I'll run for president. I don't know.
I say, if you're indicted, you're invited.
All right, Matt, we've heard the trailer from The Apprentice. It takes a fictionalized yet deeply researched approach to Donald Trump's early years. How well do you think the film balanced the dramatic storytelling with maybe historic accuracy?
I think as a movie, it works pretty well. It's very entertaining. The director, Ali Abbasi, does a good job keeping the action going, keeping things interesting. The script by Gabriel Sherman, of course, as you mentioned, was heavily researched. I will tell you that the Trump legal team did not want this film released. Last year, it did get a release, finally. It hasn't made a lot of money, but it's out there. And it's out there enough that the Oscar people liked Sebastian Stan's performance as Trump, and they really liked Jeremy Strong's performance as Roy Cohn. So I think the balance here is to present a story of, you know, probably the most famous man in the world right now. And everyone's got their opinions, right? This is a film that I think some people will not want to see, and others may look at it and say, oh, this is a hatchet job. So I think what works well in the movie is the first half of the movie, Craig. The first half of the movie takes place in the 1970s. So Trump is working for his father, Fred Sr. You know, they have apartment buildings all through New York City, and they're being sued by the federal government for civil rights violations with renting to tenants. And so they're in trouble. And through happenstance, Trump meets Roy Cohn, infamous lawyer, famous lawyer, whatever you want to call him. His name kind of precedes himself, but he is a man of action who believes in several rules, including deny, 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 and attack, attack, attack. And he kind of takes Trump under his wing. They file a counter lawsuit against the government. And historically, as you know, they win. But Trump has bigger dreams beyond running his dad's, you know, tenant building. So that's where the film goes. I think the first half is very good because it takes place in the 70s. And the Trump we see in the first half of the movie is not the Trump we see now. He's a little less assured of himself. He's polite when he's out talking to people. He's a little bit insecure, I would say. He's not. So the bluster isn't quite there. And Stan plays him really, really well in that first half. I don't think the second half of the movie is quite as good. That's when we get into the 1980s. Trump's a big shot by this time. He's married Ivana, played by Maria Bakalova. Some of the more salacious things come out in the second half, like allegations of Trump, you know, popping pills that are essentially speed so he doesn't have to sleep very much, an obsession with his hair, an obsession with his weight, the alleged rape of Ivana while they were married, which, you know, became a big story as well. So I think the second half, it kind of feels like a bunch of SNL sketches in the second half of the movie. But in the second half of the movie, we see Trump flower into what, you know, what we see. And again, I'm not here to pass judgment. I'm here to say that the movie is entertaining. It's well done. I think the director and the screenwriter do a great job. But the main reason to see this movie are the two performances. Sebastian Stan, really good as Trump. He's got all the mannerisms down, but it's not a caricature either. And Jeremy Strong hits it out of the park as Roy Cohn. You know, he's the lawyer you would want in your corner, but not the lawyer you'd want against you. I would say that. So the performances are the reason to see it. And I would say this, the film reminds me of the Frankenstein story. And you can interpret that any way you want. But Cohen is Dr. Frankenstein, who creates the quote-unquote monster. Now, how you view the word monster in terms of the Frankenstein story is how one would view Donald Trump, okay? And I'm not here to pass judgment on any of that. I think that's essentially what the director and screenwriter are going for, is that Cohen is the mastermind. He teaches Trump the rules to live by, the rules to play tough by, and Trump becomes the apprentice who becomes the master. So it's almost like a Frankenstein story, and I'm not passing judgment as to, you know, what a monster is, but essentially that's the motif of the film, is Cohen is Dr. Frankenstein in a way.
I've read where this film has been described as gleefully vulgar and queasily funny. How does the tone, would you say, influence the audience perception of the main characters?
People are going to come into this with their own perception. I don't know that any minds are going to be changed by this movie. I will say there has been some criticism that Ali Abassi was too nice to Trump in the movie. You know, that he comes off as, you know, in the first half of the film, he comes off as, you know, a human being, which is what he is. But for people who don't like Donald Trump, he's something less than a human being. I mean, we turn on the TV, we know exactly where people stand on this. So it's not my job to say that. I think the audience knows what they're getting going into it. And I would say the film is funny in parts. I mean, you know, Stan plays him as, you know, he's funny in the part. There are some funny moments. There's some moments that are not funny. And eventually, I think what you see is this transformation of Donald Trump from kind of insecure guy running his dad's tenant buildings to the guy who's living in Trump Tower. And how we get there is really the Roy Cohn pulling the strings. That's the main, I think, focus of the movie. Some people are going to like that. Some people are not going to like that. Some people aren't going to want to see this movie at all. If they're not Trump fans, they might not want to stomach it to watch this kind of, you know, transformation. And if they are Trump fans, they're probably not going to like it either. So if you're a movie fan, a fan of really good acting, that's the audience that I think would be interested. And I think these Oscar nominations are richly deserved by Sebastian Stan and Jeremy Strong.
All right, Matt, this Sunday, I have a feeling you're not going to be watching reruns of spring training baseball games in the evening. Of course, you'll be watching the Academy Awards, and it's now time for you to give us your Academy Award predictions. Let's start right off the top, if we could, Matt. Best Picture, who's going to win?
Well, I think Anora is going to win. I think it's become kind of the de facto favorite as we've gone through this process. There really has never been a clear favorite, I don't think, throughout this Oscar race for Best Picture. But I think Anora is kind of the critical darling. I think it's the film that kind of checks all the boxes. It's like two different movies. The second half is a comedy. The first half is this kind of crazy. It's all kind of funny, the whole thing. But I think it works on a lot of levels. And you got to remember, the Academy membership has gotten younger. It's gotten more diverse in the last 10 years. And I think they're more open to picking a film like Anora for Best Picture.
All right, Matt, Best Director.
This is the tricky one. I think it's either going to be Sean Baker for Anora or Brady Corbett for The Brutalist. What we don't know yet, Craig, is how this AI editing controversy, in quotes, has affected The Brutalist, where, you know, in post-production, they manipulated some vowel sounds, Hungarian vowel sounds, by Adrian Brody and Felicity Jones to make them sound Hungarian, because the way they did their performance, they weren't quite hitting the correct pronunciation. Now, this was an unforced error by The Brutalist people. The American audience can't tell. They cannot tell if when they're speaking Hungarian, if the inflections are correct or not. They can't tell. So I think they box themselves into a corner here. I do think Corbett has a good chance to win director, but I'm going to go Sean Baker to win director for Anora.
The Oscar given to the best male lead performance is called Best Actor. Who will win?
Wow, this one's getting tricky. Adrian Brody has won almost everything leading up to The Brutalist, but Sunday night, Timothée Chalamet won the SAG for A Complete Unknown. He finally won a big award over Brody. I think Chalamet should win. I think he's going to win because the Academy membership is different from the BAFTAs. They're different from other awards, and I think that, again, this AI situation could nick Adrian Brody, even though it's not his fault. And let's face it, if Brody wins this Oscar, It'll be his second Oscar, kind of playing the same character. In The Pianist, he was a Holocaust survivor from Eastern Europe. And I'm not diminishing Adrian Brody's acting talents, but it'd be a second Oscar for kind of playing a similar, very similar role, whereas Chalamet completely transformed himself into Bob Dylan. And I think Chalamet's going to win, but it's going to be a really close vote.
Best actress, Matt. Who's going to win?
Oh, boy. Well, I think Mikey Madison should win for Anora, but I think Demi Moore is going to win for The Substance, and I do not think Demi Moore gives an Oscar-winning performance in The Substance. It's a good film. I don't think it's a great film. They've run a great Oscar campaign for her. I think she's probably going to win, but I think any of the other four nominees, Cynthia Erivo, Fernando Torres, maybe not Carlos Sevilla Gascon, her chances went out the window with the resurfacing of some derogatory comments she made years ago. But I think Moore's going to win, but I don't like the prospect of Demi Moore winning this Oscar. I really don't.
Let's move.
Horror fans will be happy.
Yes. Let's move to the best performance by a male in a supporting role, the best supporting actor.
This one is a lock. Kieran Culkin's going to win for A Real Pain. I think Edward Norton should win for A Complete Unknown, or Jeremy Strong should win for The Apprentice, but it's going to be Kieran Culkin. That one is a slam dunk.
Best supporting actress?
Another slam dunk. Zoe Saldana is going to win for Emilia Perez. She has not been affected by some of the controversy around this movie, or the fact that the movie has basically made no money in theaters. You know, it's a Netflix movie, but she's going to win, and she's won everything leading up to this point. So I see no reason. The two supporting performances, I think, are pretty much locks at this point.
Matt, how do you see the rest of the night going? Which movie are we going to be talking about on Monday?
I think we'll be talking about Anora, which I think is, you know, going to get one of the screenplay awards as well. Could get the editing award. Sean Baker also edited the film. He might win four Oscars. It's very possible because he wrote the script and he produced it as well. So it could be a four Oscar night for Sean Baker, which would be crazy. I think Wicked gets a lot of technical awards. I think Wicked has been a little overlooked. I think it is a good film. It was better than I thought it was. Thought it was going to be. And I think it wins a lot of technical awards. Cinematography is going to be really interesting. The Brutalist versus Nosferatu. I think it's going to be one of those two. Makeup should be The Substance, I think. And we'll just have to see. I don't think any film's going to win six or seven Oscars. It's going to be... Things are going to be spread around a bit.
All right, Matt, it's time for the Academy Award trivia part of our program today. And we're going to be a little sad with today's question, and then we'll reflect on it in just a moment. Matt, who is the only actor to win Academy Awards for both The French Connection and Unforgiven?
That, of course, is Gene Hackman, who we, you know, just passed away. His body was found yesterday.
That's just really sad, and I'm sure you have a lot of comments on his career that spanned many, many years.
Yeah, what can you say? I was aware of Gene Hackman probably when I was 7, 8 years old, because my dad and the family, we went to the drive-in theater to see the Poseidon Adventure, you know? And there he was leading them to rescue. But what an actor. You know, not the classically good-looking Hollywood star. It took him a long time to become a star. You know, he was kind of a working, out-of-work actor in the 60s, and Warren Beatty is the one that really, Hackman says he owes it all to Warren Beatty, because he put him in a film called Lilith that Beatty did in 1964, and Hackman had one scene, and then he remembered him when he was casting Bonnie and Clyde and cast Gene as his brother, Buck Barrow. And that was Hackman's first Oscar nomination. Of course, he wins the Oscar for The French Connection in 1971. Later gets a supporting actor Oscar for Unforgiven. Just Hollywood's everyman actor, right? He could play any part. He was commanding on screen. Even in throwaway movies like Runaway Jury and The Firm, he is so good at chewing the scenery, and he just commands the screen. He's fascinating to watch. Great actor. Retired 20 years ago. I think his last great role was The Royal Tenenbaums in 2001 for Wes Anderson. Hilarious in that part. Even though he was 95, I'm sad, and I'm saddened by, you know, the situation of how he died, and we'll you know, find out more about that. You know, when legends like him pass, you just realize, wow, I've watched him on screen for over 50 years.
I was looking at his other Academy Award nominations. Bonnie and Clyde, 1967. I Never Sang for My Father, 1970. Mississippi Burning, great movie, for Best Actor.
He busts some heads in that movie, doesn't he?
And who can forget Hoosiers?
Of course, Hoosiers. Lex Luthor and Superman, you know? He could do it all. The Conversation, a great performance in that, the Francis Coppola film from 1974. But I'm kind of sad. I was, you know, you just know that the Clint Eastwoods and the Sean Connerys and the Robert Duvalls and the Michael Caines, the time is going to come. They're, you know, Connery died a few years ago, but there's a lot of aging actors that, you know, I've come to almost feel like I know them, you know, through my years watching movies. So, sad day, Gene Hackman.
We've been to the movies with Matt Olien. Thank you, Matt.
You bet.